Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Marigold Clothing, making fashion fun since 1989, in Broad Ripple, featuring women's clothing, gifts, and accessories, and committed to customer service. More on Facebook or at marigoldclothing.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio and WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we'll be talking about the National Maple Syrup Festival that takes place this weekend in Brown County. We'll also hear from local sandwich shop owner Lisa Marino Moyer, whose Griner's sub shop was damaged by a car crash recently. We'll also talk with Jeff McCabe of Big Woods Brewing and Quaff On about a new location that's taking shape in Speedway, Indiana. And we'll revisit our Cook This series with a cooking segment from Andrew Whitmoyer, chef at Thunderbird in Indianapolis. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, it's that time of year. Oh, I know it's still winter and that spring doesn't officially arrive for a couple of weeks. And yes, we had snow this past week and we're likely to have more because it's basketball tourney time after all, and the weather is always a challenge during March Madness. But still, spring is near. And one way I know for sure is that it's time for the National Maple Syrup Festival, which takes place this weekend in Brown County. So the sap is definitely flowing. It doesn't take much of a warm-up to make that happen, though. In fact, all it takes are days when the temperature stays above freezing and nights when the temperature falls again to start the sap flowing in sugar maple trees. And those trees are all around us. In fact, there's one in my front yard and probably one somewhere near you, too. Indiana is the southernmost and westernmost portion of the United States maple syrup belt. That maple belt stretches from Maine down into Ohio and Indiana and back up into Wisconsin, covering 10 states and several Canadian provinces. Which means that spring happens here first. You see, the days warm up and the sap starts flowing in our sugar maple trees well before it does in trees in, say, Michigan, Vermont, or Canada. So it seems fair to say that this is the place where the first sap of the season starts flowing. And the National Maple Syrup Festival will be supporting that claim with lots of activities in Nashville, Indiana, and at Brown County State Park. And that's where I'll be this afternoon, judging the Sweet Victory Challenge recipe contest at the Abe Martin Lodge inside the park. And I get to judge alongside some pretty terrific and well-known chefs, including Regina Mihalik and David Talent, which is very cool for me, too. There are three categories of judging: breakfast, savory, and dessert. And we'll be tackling the savory division, which for me is even more interesting than the sweet categories. I love using maple syrup in savory dishes, so I'm looking forward to trying some very tasty stuff. Unfortunately, I didn't have the chance to cook much of anything when the family and I tried to make our own maple syrup some years ago. Remember when I said I have a sugar maple tree in my front yard? Well, that's the one we tapped. And while we did indeed get a bucket full of sap, keep in mind that it can take more than 40 gallons of sap to make just 1 gallon of syrup. So what we ended up with was about a cup of syrup. But we had fun tapping the tree, although the kids thought it was weird to have a bucket hanging from a tree in the front yard for several weeks. We had bought the tap, a little nozzle sort of thing that you hammer into a hole that you've drilled into the tree, when we visited a maple syrup farm, or a sugar bush, in southern Indiana. The family and I spent a day at L.M. Sugarbush near Salem, Indiana, some years ago, helping the proprietors tap trees. By which I mean the oldest kid and I trudged around through the snow with the crew. The rest of the family took a pass and headed back with the dog to the cabin that we had rented for the evening. But the oldest and I persevered and tromped on through the snow, helping the team connect more trees to the serpentine system of tubes that led down a hill to a collection tank. From there, the sap was transferred to the evaporator in the sugar house, where a wood-stoked fire heated the liquid. Eventually, the slightly sweet sap, which we tasted during the process, would become syrup. I think it's interesting that maple syrup is one of the few products that I can think of that's harvested from the wild. The trees are often 30 to 50 years old, but a new technology might change syrup making. In the course of studying whether vacuum pressure might help the sap to flow in older trees, researchers found that more sap could be extracted from little saplings by simply lopping off the tops of the small trees and hooking them up to a vacuum extractor. Researchers say that in the future, growers might plant trees in rows to be just cut down and the sap harvested via vacuum. They wouldn't have to tend to an old sugar bush where trees can be damaged by wind and ice, where buckets hang, or where plastic tubing snakes in and around the trees. Maple trees might become like other crops and be bred to produce sap more reliably than is possible now. And getting the sap to flow wouldn't depend on Mother Nature providing warm days and cold nights. But for now, maple syrup is still produced just about the same way it has been for generations. And you can get a look at the maple syrup making process and see how it was done by Native Americans as well at a variety of maple syrup festivals in Indiana. The National Maple Syrup Festival, where I'll be judging that recipe contest, takes place today and tomorrow in Nashville and at Brown County State Park. It's a $10 admission for the festival at the park. The park admission is free if you take a shuttle bus from Nashville. Otherwise, there is park admission as well. For more information on that fest, go to browncounty.com or look for the National Maple Syrup Festival on Facebook. L.M. Sugarbush, where the family and I helped with tapping those years ago, also hosts the festival this weekend. It's located in Salem, Indiana, and admission and parking is free, although you might have to walk a ways from the road to the farm. For more information on that event, which is now in its 25th year, go to lmsugarbush.com. And then March 12th and 13th is Indiana's first Maple Weekend. A dozen Indiana syrup producers around the state will be participating with open houses so visitors can see the syrup making process up close. For more information on Indiana's Maple Syrup Weekend, look for it on Facebook. At Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we try to keep up with all sorts of local restaurant news, but sometimes the news isn't good. In fact, sometimes it's heartbreaking. On February 12th, someone drove a vehicle into the sandwich shop owned by Lisa Moreno Moyer, a local restaurant and food truck owner that we've talked to here before on Eat Drink Indiana Radio. Her Griner's Sub Shop at Shelby and Raymond Streets was damaged extensively in the crash, but worse than that, longtime employee Tina Scruggs was seriously injured. Tina, who had worked at Griner's for more than 30 years, sustained a broken leg and ankle, a broken arm and wrist, and a neck fracture, as well as internal injuries. Lisa has set up a GoFundMe account to help with her employee's medical expenses. Look for Griner's Girl Tina at GoFundMe.com. For the backstory on what has made this Griner's location so special since 1969, we're looking back at an interview with Lisa after she opened the classic sub shop.
Oh, my gosh. It's a wonderful world at Raymond and Shelby, you know, and there's so much history here at Griner's. You know, it's been here since 1969, and from what I know, it's the oldest sub shop in Indy. And so I'm kind of calling that an institution, don't you think?
Absolutely.
So now tell me about how you... Why are you here? Why did you buy the sub shop? Oh my! Well, I'm going to give you the shortened version of that. If I gave you the real true story of how I got here, I'm not sure you'd believe me. So I'll just say that I was given this incredible opportunity to find out about this shop. I'm from the North Side. I'm now considering myself this new transplant South Side girl, and I love it. I totally love it. Forget it. I'll tell you the truth. The truth of the matter is life's too short to not tell you the truth. I was online dating and met somebody and didn't want to date him, but I wanted to buy a sub shop. You asked. There you go. I know. Why hide it anymore, right? It's such a great story. You know, and I always say my motto in life is everyone has a story. And if you could have told me for 1 second, this would have been, you know, 3/4 of the way through my story, I wouldn't have believed you. But it's true. And I ended up buying this place with a retiring police officer in Indianapolis. She left in January of this year, and with awards. She was very highly merited and recognized in her field, and she's going to do just the same here at Griner's, the sub chef.
Now, people might know you because of Scout's Treats truck. So that's what they're thinking right when they think of you, right? And not a sub right shop. So that's kind of an interesting story, like you said.
Yeah. Well, it is. And the fact of the matter is that I am still Scout's, you know. And there have been times I'm driving down the road, or I might be in the pink truck driving down the road, and I just start laughing like, what? How did I get here? I'm in a pink truck. What? But it's good. It's good. And here I am. I left the corporate world 13 years ago now, and then some change. And now I have these three fun businesses. And it's kind of like my kids. If somebody were to ask me which one I love the most, I love them all and differently. But certainly Griner's is my new true love.
Well, now tell me, so you have the Scout's Treats truck and Griner's and...
And I opened up Indy's first dog treat food truck called Bark Truck. There are, I know, it's hard to say that without laughing, but there are a few of them in the country, probably only two or three others that I know of, so that's pushing it when I say a few. But I think you'll see a trend towards that. But we're looking to do something a little different with that. We're looking to be full service, and I planned on this winter, but with Griner's, that kind of set that schedule back a little bit. And as you know, when you own a small business, you need to be flexible with your timeline. And so, our goal with Bark Truck is to be full service. So you can go online late spring with us. You can go online and order your dog food, homemade dog treats, shampoo, flea medicine, whatever it is that we're selling online that we have in stock. And we will deliver it to your house. Some friendly chap will poop scoop your yard and be done with it. So there you go.
No, so when is that starting, or has it already started?
No, it has not started. Our website will be up and running in March, and we're hoping to have that service sometime in March, maybe the beginning of April.
So you are a busy person, so you're not just making, you know, wonderful brownies and stuff like that. You're also making dog treats and now subs. So right. Tell me, you know, the sub shop is just fascinating. Tell me a little bit about it and its history.
You know, I still continue to try to learn as much as I can about the history, and I feel like I learn a little bit more each day. I was fortunate about, I'm going to say 3 months ago, the original founder, Ray Griner's daughter, Kim, came in to the shop. And I knew she didn't have a ton of time, but selfishly, I pinned her down for about 5 minutes at a table, and I just started asking her as many questions as I could. And I do know there were a handful of Griner's for some time, and I also understand there was still one left in Japan. How's that for some trivia? But this is the only Griner's left here in the United States. This is it. Yes. And truth be told, on October 6th, it shut down. And I came in with a new offer, because it was my intention to buy it, but I came in with a new offer on October 6th. And on October 8th, Robert Bennett and I reopened the sub shop, and people thought it was closed for renovation, which is somewhat true. If you look around, I've renovated. And here we are. And business is absolutely strong. And every single person that walks through our door is just, they're like a gift to us. Everybody is just as important as the person that left and the person that's coming in behind them. And, you know, we've got this canvas here. It's a huge canvas. I don't even measure that. But Years ago, I saw this fabulous canvas in a design magazine, and I thought, oh my gosh, I love that. Well, the woman had her neighbors and friends and people that she loved draw their self-portrait on it. And I thought, what a great idea. So I had this canvas that my family was begging me to get rid of, and I painted over it, and I have, 200 squares, different colors. And we have people coming in, no kidding, every day that choose to, on their own, give us their history. Well, I've been coming since I was 7. I've been coming since I was... And these people have been coming since 1969 or the early 70s. And these are the people that we've invited to draw their self-portrait. And
how cool is that? It's neat. It's huge, and there are little faces, and people have filled in their faces.
Yes, I know. I know. I'm so excited. I'm gonna have a little push here to get the rest of it completed, to have this up on our wall permanently. It really is a tribute and kind of a thank you to them this spring.
We've been talking with Lisa Marino Moyer of Griner Sub Shop, whose business was damaged and an employee seriously injured when a vehicle crashed into it last month. To help, look for Griner's Girl Tina at GoFundMe.com. We are back here at Eat Drink Indiana Radio, and we are talking today with local sub shop and food truck owner Lisa Marino Moyer. She owns Griner's Sub Shop and several food trucks as well. We caught up with Lisa after she bought the classic Griner's and got the story on how she has gone from food truck to sub shop.
It's really no different than the rest of my life. When I look back, you know, I have to laugh in my daughter's class when they were all in kindergarten. You asked every child what they wanted to be, and 2 out of 3 of them said a dolphin trainer. None of us know ever where that came from. Like, where's that come from? Dolphin trainer. I don't know. But if you would have told me when I was young that I would have gone into travel, I managed travel for corporations for years. It's what I did for Indiana's largest corporations. And here I am. My family, much to their chagrin, I told them one day that my new career was going to be a cupcake truck, and they thought I had crossed over some bridge somewhere. And at the 11th hour, I actually changed it from a cupcake truck to a treat truck. I did some research and saw some on the East Coast, and I thought, you know what, that's really it's a little bit broader, and I chose to do that without regret. I mean, we do everything on this truck, and that has gone so well for the last 3.5 years. I mean, we all kicked it off. Those of us that have been around for 3+ years, we kicked it off with Super Bowl. And once you have Super Bowl, though, I mean, really, there's Gen Con and some other great events, but, Super Bowl is like the Mac Daddy. It's a way to kick off your business, right? And it has just gone so well. But, you know, I saw people the first year that we were all in business through the winter, I saw fear in people's eyes with these food trucks. And I thought, you know, something, we need to rewrite our business plans if we're all afraid. We need to outsmart the winter. And in fact, we did. And we got ourselves booked with a lot of places. Instead of just showing up on a corner and waiting for people to come, we would book ourselves.
So that's how you get through the winter. You know where you're going, right? And people want you to come to certain places, and you get booked up.
Right. That, as well as really, for the most part, I love to operate like that all year long. And I like to maximize if I'm going to bring the truck out. I'd like to have it booked, and we're going to maximize our time and the people. During the winter, I mean, you know, clearly it's a tough time for trucks. And usually every winter, unfortunately, you see a few trucks go down. And that's the nature of the beast in this business. This is not an easy business.
And I think so many people think they want to get into it. You know, but tell me a little bit about the reality of it.
The reality of it is I'm not here to kill anyone's dream. You know, really, I'm not. You know, I had a guy one time that wanted to meet with me for lunch. And, in fact, I did. And he wanted to start a little peddling hot dog stand. Yeah. And he asked me what my first words of advice were. And I think I told him they were run. I think that's what I said. I said, run. as fast as you can run. No, actually, I told him, if you're going to do it, just, you know, go all the way, get yourself a truck, and you'll be able to do more events that way. And he did, and I know that for him, as well as the rest of us, you, if this is your dream, then you need to live it the smartest way that you can, and live it passionately. And I really think that's what I do with these trucks. And I just happened to inherit another truck with this brick and mortar. So I have three now, which...
Oh, my goodness.
I know. That feels a little illegal, doesn't it? Right. I know. So, but, you know, it's not... I am surrounded by really awesome people. This is not a badge of honor for me. I'm really not that special. I'm really, truly not. But, you know, I have a lot of people that have been very supportive, and really even my family has come full circle and no longer frowning upon the trucks that they saw. And, of course, Bark Truck has a 7.5-foot steel bone on the top of it. And I once was forced to pick up my daughter from school in that, as I had no other vehicle at my disposal.
So what did she think?
You mean what shade of color was she? She was was in the pink family. Yeah, and she wasn't happy about it. But I picked her up a quarter of a block away, so, you know. Well, I will tell you, the very first time I ever picked her up in the Scouts truck, she was mortified. You just don't do that to somebody in junior high. But then when her friend saw I had cupcakes on there...
Well, yeah, that changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, suddenly it was a different story. So, you know, people are... It's old news now, though. You know, people know that that we have these trucks, so, yeah.
So how has the treat truck business been in the last 3 years?
You know, well, it's competitive. You know, I was the first out on the streets, which, again, doesn't make me any more special, you know, but I wasn't the first brick and mortar. I just happened to be the first truck, and I just... You know, business is great. That's how business is. Yeah. But, you know, I have a very simple philosophy, and that is with any of my businesses, and that is really, really amazing food. So the best cupcake that I could ever create. And there are great cupcakes out there, but I'll put mine up to anyone's. And the best cupcake that you can make with the most amazing service. And at a fair price. And, you know, at times even that's debatable with people. They may think your price is not fair. And my goal is this. I want to be around in a year, but I'm not going to Vegas. You know, that's the best way I can describe it. So, but it's like any business. There's nothing for free. You just have to work for it, and you have to work hard, and you just need to be into it. And I will admit there were some nights that I just, and some days I just wasn't into it. But those are really few and far between. For the most part, I just can't believe I get to do this. So I've always say, like, cupcakes have changed my life. I know. And I have dear, dear friends from my business. I never would have met them if it were not for this business. You know, and I have already seen, like with Griner's, it's just story after story after story. People are fabulous on every quadrant of the city. We just have the most amazing people in the city. We just so do.
Now, tell me a little bit about when you came into the shop and any kind of changes you've done. Revamped the menu or changed certain things? How is it different?
That's a really great question. You know, I think with any business, when you come in and you take an institution, I think you have to be really, really careful what you change because it's not here by accident. So I did the minimal to the max change that I really felt was needed. I did a complete painting makeover. A makeover of the front, changed the order of things around that made best operational sense. Just updated, like, the chairs, but I kept the tables. That's my meeting you halfway. And kept every single sandwich. I actually came in thinking I was going to probably remove a few. Not one. There's not one that I could justify removing. But we have added three or four. And our soups are now homemade. They were not homemade before, and now they're homemade.
Oh, nice. I see the sign over there, you know, loaded baked potato, for example. So tell me about the soups.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so the loaded baked potato is my business partner's mother's recipe, and we just sold out right now, so they're making more. So, I mean, like, we're saying homemade as in fresh. So we'll have more out. But, our soups have gone really well, and we'll slowly introduce more. I know as we go into the summer months, that may not be as many, but, you know, it's people like their soup, you know. There's certain food staples that people like, whether it's pizza or soup or, you know, and we do pizza, too, for crying out loud.
So you can't take the pizza off the menu?
I can't, but I said, okay, if we're going to do this, let's look at how we're doing it, and made a few changes, and upgraded the sausage, threw a little fennel in there, and some worked on a couple of our crusts, and I have to say, okay, so I took a pizza home two nights ago, and my daughter said, she goes, oh my gosh, this is the best pizza in the world. Where did you get this? I said, are you kidding me? Where did I get this? Like, I made this. This is our pizza.
And you have teenagers, right?
Yes, I do. Look at me. I don't look like this for nothing. I have teenagers, yes. Yeah. I have two in college, but I have a freshman. Yeah, so she's, yeah, so it's her new favorite. Yeah. I can't believe we're a sub shop, and I'm just feel like I could one day be known for our pizzas. Isn't that crazy? I know.
Now, tell me about the meats and the breads and how you build the sandwiches.
Okay. You know, I have to say, if it weren't for this very, very old secret family bread recipe, you always hear about somebody having some secret recipe, and you're like, man, how did you get that? Well, I got it. And I bought it. So, I mean, you know, I'm really not sure I would be here without this bread recipe. I'm not sure I would have bought that. I don't know what, you know. So
You bought a bread recipe?
Well, we brought, I mean, really, Griner's is about the bread. The bread is incredible. So it's baked from scratch every day.
Right here, you're making and baking bread from scratch, not buying frozen dough?
Oh, that's illegal to even say that. No. No. Every day. And as a matter of fact, Tina has been baking our bread now for 31 years. Count it, 31 years. That's right.
You have a bread baker here at the shop who's been here that long?
Yeah, 31 years. I know. And she says I'm her favorite boss. Okay, I just made that up.
We've been talking with Lisa Moreno-Moyer about Griner's Sub Shop, which sustained considerable damage and an employee was seriously injured when a vehicle crashed into the restaurant recently. Lisa has set up a GoFundMe account for her employees' medical expenses. To help, look for Griner's Girl Tina at GoFundMe.com. We've said before here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, the Indianapolis restaurant and craft beer scene just continues to grow, and you can see that growth on Main Street in Speedway. The street's becoming a destination with an appealing mix of racing, restaurants, beer, and wine. Foyt Wine Vault, Daredevil Brewing, and soon the new Big Woods Brewing Company location will be opening its restaurant and beer garden at the corner of Main and 10th Streets in Speedway. We talked with Jeff McCabe of Big Woods Brewing early on in the process about the new location coming to Speedway. First of all, tell me the Big Woods story, sort of the progression of Big Woods.
Sure. Well, we started about 6 years ago. And what the whole beginning for this was to buy this. We bought this little restaurant in Nashville that was originally the Brown Jug, just a little you know, they made pies and that kind of stuff. Just a tiny little place. It had been closed for a couple of years. Then we thought, well, okay, we bought a restaurant. What do we do with it? And it was Tim O'Brien, who is my son-in-law, who was doing some great brewing down the street at our bed and breakfast. And we thought, well, Tim's making this great beer. Why don't we have a microbrewery.
Why don't we start a microbrewery? Yeah, that was it.
That was it. So that's how we started. And we were really surprised. We waited till after the busy season, or at least we thought we did. You know, so we opened up in November, and still the first day we were really busy. We ran out of beer after 3 days the first week, and we recovered quickly. But we went from brewing. We would close the restaurant on Sunday nights, and we would brew from Sunday to Wednesday. And then we would open up again on Wednesday. So if you can imagine breaking down a kitchen on Sunday night, and then, you know, brewing like crazy, you know, around the clock, and then opening back up. That's kind of how we started. So we quickly moved on to, you know, we built bigger and bigger systems, and still we didn't have enough room for all the folks who wanted to see us. So we bought the building across the street.
Oh, Nashville. No, that's right. Now people might remember that, you know, when you expanded, right? When was that?
That was 3 years ago. And that's when we built the Big Woods Pizza Company, which, you know.
Now, that's taken off very well, too, right?
Oh, it's great. It's who knew, right? We have a great time. We do artisan pizzas there, right? We start from scratch. We make the dough. The ingredients are all fresh. You can build your own pizza or have one of our signature pizzas. So that's a lot of fun, and people gravitated to it. In both places, the original Bigwood Brewing Company and at the pizza company, which, like I said, is not very far apart. You know, we do a lot of entertaining, too. We have a lot of live music and that kind of stuff, because we're blessed to be in Brown County, where you've got all those great musicians and that kind of stuff. So we kind of think of it as a whole experience. We call that Big Woods Village now. And, of course, upstairs in that big building, we've got still got the four-barrel system that really carried us for a few years. And we do all our specialty and feature beers there now. So up the road, we built a bigger brewery in an old bowling alley, which is great because we're all big Lebowski fans, right? So what better than
it fits, right?
Yeah, why not build a brewery inside an old bowling alley with good karma and that kind of stuff? And that's worked out really well for us. And as we've gone along, people like Mark Havens, who's our head brewer there, and like Jim Dunbar, who's sitting with us here today, joined in with us. And it was last year that we built the place in Bloomington. And that actually was an old, it was a restaurant that was pretty well known in town, Cafe Django.
Right. Now, how did that go?
Well, I went great. I mean, what happened was Cafe Django was the first place to put our beer on tap in Bloomington.
Oh, that's nice. So it's kind of a natural progression there.
Yeah. And so the owners called us up one day and said, hey, we're going to go do something different. We're going to move and, you know, would you like to buy our business? And so we took about 8 hours to think about it, and we did that. And, you know, then pretty quickly we started to work on that building, and we built this 35-foot bar that kind of snakes around the building and that kind of thing. And we came up with a concept there for kind of a tap room where we're a microbrewery, craft brewer. We make our own beer, but we feature other beers too. So 24 taps, 8 of them are ours. The other 16 are our favorite other beers. So it's just, you know, if you want to try one of our beers like Hair Trigger or the IPA and match it up kind of with Green Flash from San Diego or Bell's or whoever, you know, it's just this great place for people who really love craft beer and really want to compare things and contrast them and that kind of stuff. And that's where we started the Blind Flight Challenge.
Now tell me about that.
Okay, so the Blind Flight Challenge is just, the idea was that a lot of people think they know a lot about beer. There are different ways to educate people about beer, but one great way to do it is to kind of set a baseline for them. So everything changes when you put a blindfold on people.
I bet that's fun.
A couple of their senses, right? So just a great way to get people to kind of level set them about the beer and then talk about it. And we actually have kind of different levels. You know, we're old aviators, right? So we have just like your basic, you know, solo kind of thing. Once you get the first level and you can identify beers after you already saw them and tasted them, put the blindfold on, can you figure out which one's which, to where we're actually comparing beers within a style and that kind of stuff. And, you know, eventually you could be a master.
So people can come and do that?
Oh, yeah. 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 And so we do it at all our places now, but that's the kind of thing. In Bloomington, you can have a lot of fun with the menu, right? Because you've got a very diverse population, people from all over. They're willing to experiment, and you know, so each of the places kind of has some of their own unique things. And our idea is that we're going to bring all of those to Speedway.
Well, now tell me what the vision is for the Speedway facility, the restaurant. Are you going to be brewing here? Tell me a little bit what it is.
Right now, we're not going to be brewing here. We'll see if that fits. But we've got a couple of other priorities. For folks who have been to Nashville, they know that we built this beautiful timber frame in front of the original place, and the new place on 10th and Main here in Speedway will feature another timber frame, but scaled up from that. So we're talking about a 7,500 square foot restaurant.
Wow, that's very big.
Yeah, and an even bigger beer garden, because if you think about Speedway and you think about the events that happen here and the number of people that come in, we're going to take what we've learned from being in a tourist town in Nashville, sure, you know, about spooling up and spooling down for how many people are in town, right? So that's kind of the idea, that we'll have this place that will remind you of our other places, kind of have the best of all of them, and just have this great place for outdoor entertaining, right? And to take advantage of, you know, a place for all those folks who come in for these great events.
Wow. So I think it'll be kind of interesting to see a big timber frame structure right there on the corner.
Yeah, it'll be a departure in a way from the other buildings on Main Street. But if you take a look at what everybody's doing, something interesting, right? Dallara's got a very interesting building. Part of the reason we love Speedway is because it's not like any place else, right? Main Street on Speedway is not your typical Main Street, right? You've got race car teams, you've got a brewery, you've got all kinds of things, winery now, you know, A.J. Foyt's winery. So all this cool stuff, and we get to be right there at the corner of 10th and Main and be part of the experience.
Now, you are going in very close to another brewery, so tell me about that. Do you feel it's going to be complimentary?
Oh, I really do. First of all, we think they make great beer. And we've followed them as they've made progress coming from Shelbyville to here and that kind of thing.
Now that's Daredevil Brewery, which will be kind of catty cornered across the street, right?
Right, right. So we think it's great. I really can imagine that we'll have their beer on tap at our place, because like I said, we'll bring that concept that's worked so well in Bloomington, where we've got our beer, and then we've got a bunch of other great craft beers, and really give beer lovers a chance to, choose for themselves. So it's a lot of fun. I think it'd be great for Daredevil, great for us, and if we could get a couple more breweries here at Speedway, I think that'd be great too.
Now tell me about the food. What can we expect as far as that goes?
Okay, so we do a lot of smoking, right? We smoke about 600 pounds of pork a week in Nashville, and some more on top of that in Bloomington. So we'll bring a big smoker, of course, and those famous pulled pork nachos and other things we do with pulled pork. In fact, our pulled pork pizzas.
Now, I have had the pulled pork nachos, and right, those are really, that's something special, right?
Yeah, they're fun, right? They're not like anybody else's. And so they'll be here for sure. So some of those signature dishes, like I said, the pizzas will be like the ones from Big Woods Pizza Company. In Bloomington, we do some other interesting things, more shared plate kind of stuff, and we can do some more kind of exotic dishes there. So, we'll have a lot of fun specials and that kind of stuff. But we'll take the best of everything we've done and bring it here. And, with all the different people that come to Speedway, I think it'll be great.
Now, tell me about, you mentioned the beer garden. Tell me what that will involve.
Well, what we're thinking, it's got to be in a closed space there, and it'll be, as far as I know, it'll be one of the biggest beer gardens in Indiana, if not regionally. And we'll build it so that as the crowds come in, we can increase the space that we're using, and we'll have some things for people to do. We'll have a great outdoor kind of menu for them, plenty of great craft beer and that kind of stuff, and an entertainment venue, so that if they're not getting enough entertainment from the other things that are here at Speedway, they can enjoy some great live music or whatever in their beer garden.
We've been talking with Jeff McCabe of Big Woods Brewing and Quaff On. For more information, go to quaffon.com or look for Big Woods Brewing on Facebook. for dinner question is one that just about everyone has to face just about every day. Dining out or delivery is always an option, of course, but here at Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we're pretty focused on cooking as well. And to that end, we have our occasional Cook This segment, where we get advice from a local chef on how they would prepare something a home cook might have on hand. The way it works is that I arrange with a local chef to arrive with some sort of main dish ingredient, they don't know what, and then they create a dish with whatever they have on hand. It's a great way to get into the mind of a chef, and a great way to get a little inspiration for our own dinnertime dilemmas. This week, we take a look at what Chef Andrew Whitmoyer of Thunderbird came up with after I picked up some sausages at Kincaid's Meat Market.
For me, like, I try to think of what I want to use, like, as a base, and then just try to build flavors off of that. Try to use comparable flavors. Try to think of ways that I can try to hit all taste sensations in a dish so it feels like a rounded, complete dish.
So what are you thinking when you're thinking andouille sausage? What runs through your mind?
Well, I mean, andouille is a great, like, southern Louisiana-style sausage. Well, maybe French, obviously, but used a lot in Louisiana cuisine. So yeah, I think of a nice, like, shrimp boil or some sort of, like, andouille gumbo or something like that.
So what kind of spices are you looking at?
A little cayenne, just add a little bit more heat to it. Andouille is definitely, like, something I really enjoy using, so there's still many ways I can take it, so I'm just trying to trying to think.
So you've got onions and red potatoes, right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm gonna probably do like a nice little, thinking more towards like a hash maybe. So I'll do like a nice little fried potato, some kind of like a Hop and John hash maybe. Traditionally, Hop and John goes on top of rice. But I find it goes well with anything kind of starchy, like if you have it, I mean, because it's usually like a bean mix, but if you add this, like, add a starchy element, it just kind of rounds it all out. So I try to mess around with the starches I use for it. So here at the restaurant, we do like a Hop and John tamale. So it's like a Hop and John base, and then we mix it with, or goes on top of masa. So just like another type of like starchy flour. So I'm thinking like really nice like potato hash over the with the kind of andouille and shrimp mixed in, be a nice kind of mix. Kind of blanch off potatoes, kind of cook them through, and then I'll get a nice cast iron hot and rip it and throw those in there to get a nice like hard crust on them. Then I'll mix in some a Hop and John mix too, which is usually onions, carrots, black eyed peas, jalapeno, little garlic, and then I'll do a nice, like, I'll do some chopped up spinach in there, or not spinach, shrimp in there. And then probably just going to do a nice, like, split the sausage, do like a nice grill on that to kind of lay over the top. So
tell me what we have so far. You've been chopping vegetables and you have potatoes on to cook. Where are we in the process?
All right, so just kind of putting all the components together. So except for the Hop and John. I like Hop and John because it's delicious, but it's really easy. Because it's essentially a mirepoix with some stuff added into it. So I've diced up onions, celery, and carrots. Did a little mince on garlic and a little mince on jalapeno. Then I do some fine chopped thyme as well, which I'll add in kind of towards the end so it doesn't cook away the flavor. It's just really nice and fresh in there. Got some shrimp thawing and got my sausage, which I may grill. I'm still playing around with that in my head, so I'm going to figure that out here in a little bit once I get going. But so blanched off my potatoes. I'm going to go ahead and strain those off, kind of try to get them cool down really fast so they don't continue to cook. Then I should be pretty close to start putting stuff together. These are Gulf shrimp I'm cutting up. They're just whole shrimp, head and tail and deveined. I'm going to just kind of cut them in half down the middle.
And, so you're cutting those lengthwise down the middle.
Lengthwise, yes. I'm going to throw the andouille on the grill, let those grill off here real quick. Get the andouille grilling off. It's coming along nicely. Can't find my cast iron anywhere, so I'm just going to cook the potatoes on a plancha. Uh-huh. It's like a flat griddle-like surface. Gets really nice and hot. Get that going. So I'll just use a blended oil mix to cook those off, some salt and pepper. I got another pan going. I'm going to cook the shrimp off real quick. Get a nice sear on those, and then I'll take those out and add my other, the mirepoix mix in, and then toss in some black eyed peas, let those warm up through. Black eyed peas, we always cook from a dry bean, so just kind of soak them overnight. And then when I cook them in the morning, I put them in a pot of water with carrots, onions, celery, garlic, and thyme, and a good amount of salt.
So how are the sausages looking? Are they doing what you had in mind?
Yeah, they're looking, getting nice grill marks on there and coming along nicely. So seem like a really nice sausage. Can't wait to taste it. Gonna go ahead and add the shrimp to the pan here.
So now you've got the potatoes that you cooked earlier, right?
Yep, these are the potatoes we blanched off, and I'm going to get them nice and seasoned, lay them out in the plancha flat, let them get a nice cooked sear, crispy sear on one side, and then flip them over and let them finish off. So, shrimp are about part cooked. I want to take them out because I'm going to toss them back in at the very end just to kind of get them combined with everything, so don't want to be fully cooked, but just slightly cooked. But nice sear on them.
So now, what have you added into the pan?
Now, in the pan that I cooked the shrimp in, I went ahead and added the mirepoix, that mix of carrots, onion, celery, jalapeno, and garlic. I add some seasoning to that as well. Once those are kind of the onions become translucent and the carrots are soft but have still a little bit of bite to them, then I'll have my black eyed peas in and let those warm up, and then add the thyme to finish it, and then the shrimp back in. So the sausage is about done. Just gonna let those go on the grill just a little while longer. Potatoes are getting a nice brown crust on them, what we wanted. Gonna add a little bit of to the mirepoix mix as well. I'm going to add a little bit of cayenne for a little extra heat, a little Louisiana hot sauce, one of my favorite hot sauces. I think people had this like wrong idea of Louisiana spice, like they think it's supposed to be like super spicy, and I think it's more of like the subtle kind of spice. I feel like I like Louisiana because it, or Louisiana hot sauce, because it's got a kick to it, but it also has like a really nice like vinegar base to it as well, which I think is a super component. I love a lot of acid in my food. I think it's an important flavor that a lot of people miss, so that's why I like the Louisiana hot sauce. It adds a nice bit of vinegar kick to it, and I don't have to use like a lemon juice or something. Black eyed peas, I'm gonna add those to the mirepoix now. So I got those sausages off the grill now. I'm gonna let those kind of rest for a minute, let those juices kind of soak back in so they don't just spill out when I cut them. Adding the thyme into the mirepoix now. So now just adding a touch of cayenne to the mirepoix mix, maybe, there you go, and a little bit of the Louisiana hot sauce, just to add that little extra vinegar kick, and give it a little bit of moisture too. give those a little toss around. Like I said, they should be pretty close to cook, so I can turn off the heat. The residual heat will let the shrimp finish.
Start put my plate together.
What do you think about when you're plating something like this?
I just want all the components to kind of be visible. When I plate, I'm more of a rustic plating style. I appreciate like really like fancy plates and everything, but at the same time, I like to have food that looks really approachable and it's a little easy to eat. You don't have to ask how to eat something. So it's the type of food I like to do. So I just think of ways that I can make it look pretty on the plate, but it doesn't necessarily it's not all like the bells and whistles. Like, so that's what I kind of think of.
Now tell me what you're doing.
So right now I'm cutting the sausage. I'm kind of a slight bias down through it. It just looks prettier that way. It's a little prettier way to present a sausage. So just cutting it up right now. Nice little micro kale from Growing Places Indy. So I'm going to add that just to add a little bit more color to it.
Now describe the whole dish.
All right. So calling it a Hop and John hash with andouille sausage. So you got red potatoes, basic Hop and John with black-eyed peas, celery, carrots, onion, jalapeno, garlic, and then a little seared shrimp on top. And then on top, a really nice local andouille sausage with some micro kale.
We've been talking and cooking with Chef Andrew Whitmoyer of Thunderbird in Fountain Square in Indianapolis. For more information on the chef's current menu, go to thunderbirdindy.com. This is Jolene Katzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Thank you so much for tuning into the show this week, and thanks also to our guests, Lisa Moreno-Moyer of Griner's Sub Shop, Jeff McCabe of Big Woods Brewing and Quaffon, and Chef Andrew Whitmoyer of Thunderbird in Indianapolis. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio.